Okay, so let's continue with this last hour in this morning. Then we have a break until 2 o'clock. I would like to engage you a little bit with an exercise. This one, creating an archetype for the Morrison model. So the only thing is, the lecture is not May 12th, so I'm sorry, I will change that. I don't know why I put May 12th. So it must be April 19th. So, here you have the model. And the idea is expressing the Morrison model as an archetype. That is a causal diagram consisting of two feedback loops, one expressing the intended and the other the unintended consequence. And since you are going to deal with a model with a lot of details, you need to simplify so as to capture the essence of the model with in an archetype. So let's say you spent 10 to 15 minutes trying to see here. Obviously you see already two feedback loops, but as I said, there is a lot of detail and you need now to capture what is essential so that you get a simple archetype. And remember, for that, what you have to do is, what is the action? That's the first question and the outcome. So let's put it, green doesn't work. So, the guidelines to create the archetype, as you remember from the first course, is starting with the action and the intended outcome. From this, you get the intended consequence feedback loop. And then the next step is the unintended consequence. What is it? And when you have determined this, then you are quite close to having the unintended consequence feedback loop. Why is this exercise quite useful? Because when you communicate some models, then you need to simplify. If you were presenting this model to an audience that haven't seen and ask you how to build the model, they will be lost. But if you are able to capture the essence in an archetype, then it is much easier to communicate. So give it a trial. And let's say we spent until half past 12 or so trying to do so. If you have questions, then ask me so I can put you on the guide. You have a solution? Yes.
From initial
Yes, but it should be balancing. If you look at the Morrison model, you get a balancing feedback loop. So you allocate more to production, you achieve more throughput, and therefore you can in principle reduce this as you are achieving that. So it should be balancing. Yes. Okay. Yes, I am not sure. I have to check that. But I was thinking. I think so. Try that. Yes. Okay, I had a chat with one of the students, and I think he's quite close to the solution. Yes, I see there are several possibilities of choosing variables to illustrate what you mean. So, just spend a few more minutes and then perhaps we can collect our thoughts. Hur går det med dig, Ragnar? Går det bra? Okay. So normally when you do archetypes, very often you do them to get started. Here I'm asking you the different thing, and that is in the end to use them to simplify and communicate the model. So what is the action here? If you are a manager here, what are you doing? Which kind of decision you are doing? The suggestion comes up, allocation to production. Does everybody agree? Okay, it seems so. So the action is allocation to production. And what they want to achieve is, what are they interested in? Do they sell in the end? What does the company profit from? the throughput, but we have two variables, the gross and the net. So which one then? The net, yes. So they are trying to influence the net process throughput, which is the measures, the products that can be used. And the more they allocate to production, other things being equal, the more they get to throughput. And then you can either verify it by yourself or reason. You have a minus here and a balancing loop. So basically it's this loop here that goes around here, but we have simplified it to have only the two most important variables, the allocation to product deduction and the net process throughput. You could, of course, put in here that how much you allocate is determined by the desired throughput. Because that defines the goal. And it's, of course, the desired net throughput, the quantities are useful. Okay, now we have this reinforcing loop here going on. And if you want to measure the unintended consequence, which one would be that? Yes? Yes. You could select several variables, but indeed the consequence of choosing this here, more allocation to production, that goes less to allocation to security. Now I change the name of the variable, but it is basically what it means. Because allocation problem correction is the same as less allocation to security. And that means that this is going to impact this. The less allocation to security, the less here. So you have a plus here. And then you have minus, plus, minus on. So this is a reinforcing loop here, which is the unintended consequence loop. So that will be a way of communicating in an archetype. The intended consequence is to allocate you resources to production so as to increase the net process throughput. But if you do this, and too much of that, you are doing less for security. And since security causes problems, the more security, the more throughput, the less security, the less net process throughput. And then you have here a reinforcing loop. You could choose a different variable. You could put here security problems or process problems. That's also okay. But that's a consequence of allocating too little security. Or you could actually even expand this and say, something like allocation to security, and for this you got security problems, process problems. Now I am using and then you would get a minus here. And so So more allocation to production, less to security, and allocation to security goes inversely to security problems, so you have a minus here. And security problem affects throughput negatively, so you have a minus there too. This will be another way of doing that, and you can check that it is correct. And I have here used the terminology security where we have process problems there. And again, archetypes can be used to start discussing a problem, but they can also be used for communication purposes. So instead of showing this complicated model, if your audience doesn't know about stock and flows, then we will rather explain it like this. Okay, any questions? I will put the solution later in Fronter. So then the last time minutes here, I am going to introduce you the first topic that we had in the for today, which I say we take it later. It's about group model building. So what I want to explain you is how do we actually, in practice, create models. So Tonje works at Norwegian Defence. Suppose she convinced the Norwegian Defence we have to do some model, simulation model of our problems, so that we understand them better and can explore different solutions. And then she will contact some what happened here? I lost this. University that works with system dynamics. It could be our university in Agder. I am professor in University of Agder, and we are several who do that. Or you could contact the University of Bergen. They are very good at this. Or you could go abroad to the University of Nijmegen in Netherlands or Albany in USA. They are experts in so-called group model building. Then I want to tell you how we would solve the problem. And that's what we do. So for instance, if you look at the homepage of the European Project on Resilience, for which I am the scientific coordinator, then you will see that we are doing like this. So basically, the situation is the following. You have two teams that are necessary to create a system dynamics model of some problem in real life. You need the experts who know everything about the problem. And you need the modelers who know how to make a model of the problem. You never find both, or very rarely find both, in the same site. So when Mnemonic, some years ago, approached us to help them develop a system simulation model of incident response, then we visited Mnemonic and had several sessions with them so as to understand what is the problem and how can we put that in as a system dynamic simulation model. And if the Norwegian Defence had some problem, then they will have to set up a group of people from different areas, different disciplines who deal with the problem, because nobody has the full overview. The way organizations, companies, in fact society, acts is that we have a lot of people who know a lot about some particular thing, but nobody knows everything. So we need a team of experts who all together are able to answer at least most of the questions that arise and help to put that into a model. And if some questions are not answered, they can help us in finding the answer, finding who else we can ask, where is the documentation, or sometimes maybe nobody knows, then we have to find some way of increasing knowledge. And then the modelers, what we do is we work together, we ask questions in group exercises so as to put together the different knowledge that is in the different heads, do a whole model that we can simulate. In addition to the necessity of working with experts so as to get the necessary insight into the problem, which we modelers don't have, working with the experts, with the domain experts, makes it that the model is accepted by the organization. So if we follow a different process, and that is we would go to the Norwegian Defense and say, okay, give me all documentation about the problem, then I come back in 6 months and I give you the solution. This wouldn't work. Because I will present a model as a crystal ball and say, look at it, see what it tells us, and that's it. And nobody feels comfortable with that. By working together with a team of experts, you ensure two things. First of all, they contribute with the expertise and they understand what we are doing. They cannot make the model themselves, but they understand what we are putting into the model. They can criticize it, they can change it. So they have ownership in the model. And in addition, they become champions for the model in the organization. Because they have contributed to that, they can defend it, they can explain it, they feel that's my baby. Then the process is illustrated here in this diagram. So in the upper corner, you see the facilitation and modeling team. That's we, the modelers, and we have the experience to facilitate, that is to conduct a group exercise, ask questions, reflect, and so on, so as to gradually put the knowledge together. And we do that through special group exercises. We don't ask what is the problem and what is this and that. Rather, we start, for instance, like, say, okay, very often they cannot say exactly what is the problem. They can tell something is wrong. They can tell you about the symptoms. But if you tell them, give me a specification of the problem, they wouldn't even agree. They are different people with different views. So we start with a set of exercises that will give us more and more insight. One of them is a map of stakeholders. And we ask, who are involved in this problem? Who are the stakeholders? Who cares about that? Then we depict two axes. One axis is the degree of involvement of the stakeholders, and the other axis is how much influence the stakeholders have on the problem. That's not the same thing. You can have people who are very much affected by the problem, but they have very little influence in solving the problem. So in the end, what we want is to identify those who both are concerned by the problem and who have influence about the problem. And we do several other exercises that indirectly are giving us more and more data. So we call them group model building exercises. And gradually, in steps, we develop a system dynamic model based on expert group knowledge. And that's a process going on over several sessions. Then we can use, it turns out that the process of creating the model is about half of the gain of the process. So it's not only the result that counts, but the participation, because you help the experts in, say, the Norwegian Defense to work together. So put together the knowledge to get a whole perception of what it is. And in doing that, they feel, and that is our experience, that they understand the issues much better. And then the system dynamics model allows them to conduct experiments. You can read the documentation here. It tells you a bit more as to how the modular facilitating team is composed. It can have up to 5 roles: facilitator, recorders, modelers, process coaches, and gatekeepers. Sometimes a person can have two roles, especially if a problem is not too complicated and so on. And as to the expert that we involve, they can be something between 6 and perhaps 12, 15, not too many because it becomes complicated. The facilitator must be very careful not to put opinions in others, and it has to be careful that everybody has to contribute. So some people like to speak a lot, and so the facilitator has to make sure that everybody, no matter role and so on, can contribute. And that's why we don't ask questions as to this, but rather give them exercises. Sit together in groups of two or three and put on each sheet one stakeholder. And then we ask them to put the stakeholders on a graph. I think we have a diagram here somewhere. Yes? You see here some exercises. So here you see the stakeholder analysis with the two axes, influence, the Y role or degree of involving in the problem to the right. And it is the upper right corner that is the most important one. Then we ask them to repeat how the problem developed and so on. So we get in these graphs can be qualitative, or if they have done very exact one, then we can use that for documentation, records, and so on. But very often we have initial sketches that they produce on sheets, and they give us some idea as to how the different indicators and variables change over time. Then we start creating better and better maps and simulation models, and this goes over several iterations until we have final model. But the model is typically sketch on the wall. We have sheets that we put on the wall. They are plastic sheets, clean sheets. They stick to the wall so we can have a wide area, and we draw the model and correct it as the people come with up with suggestions and so on. And then the modelers will in the end clean that up and develop a Vincent model that is showing the next time. And every time we try to achieve consensus, that is, does the participant say yes, yes, that is, and so on. If there are disagreements, then there are issues that we have to look in more depth and so on. We have used this in a lot of problems. For instance, we had a project for Statoil Hydro some years ago about security risks when introduction using e-operations. Today it's called integrated operations, that is connecting all the platforms in a digital network, transferring much of the activities to onshore. Today there are much less personnel on their platforms and much more onshore. They sit in control rooms with a lot of data and different experts and so on, and can use very advanced tools, database tools for everything in the process, from exploration, production, maintenance, and so on, risk assessments, emergency handling, and so on. A lot of that is done using the control rooms, and you can, in addition to the permanent personnel that is in the control rooms, involve external experts. So by introducing a digital platform and connecting everything, they were also introducing security risk, information security risk, so we created models for that. I mentioned another project that we did with Mnemonic on information security. We had another one that was concerned with the security of grids, of energy grids and so on. That was a European project. And currently we are working with a European project which is called Smart Mature Resilience. Let me see if I can Yes. This project. So that's a project where I am scientific coordinator, and it works with 7 cities: Glasgow, Bristol, San Sebastian in Spain, Rome in Italy, Vejle in Denmark, Kristiansand, and Riga. And then there are 4 universities, and it is deemed, and so on. This picture was taken just a few days ago. You see me here in Spain. I don't know. It's not possible to make this bigger. Well, we can perhaps increase this. So a few days ago, we had this a workshop in Donostia. Is the Basque name for the city of San Sebastian. So we were a lot of people because there are 13 partners, and so on. And so on. Okay, so if you want, you can have a little look at this web page, and then you learn a little more as to how system dynamics is used. Here we create a maturity model. Have you heard about maturity models in connection with security? A maturity model, that's a description of stages from which to pass in order to achieve some capabilities. And they are more and more important and more effective when dealing with complex problems. And here we are creating a resilience management guideline for Europe using a maturity model that is expressed with a simulation model. And the simulation model, we use system dynamics and Venzim to create the connections in that. Yes. There's another thing that maybe I can show you in a moment. Since I spoke about the maturity model. So the understanding that we have now is, you all know the PDCA wheel from quality improvement and from the information security management system. So for resilience, we have described a trajectory of maturity starting, we call the stages starting, moderate, advanced, robust, and vertebrate. The first letter, S, M, A, R, and then we selected the T from vertebrate so that it is smart, mature resilience. And the idea is that we are creating, we call it a resilience backbone, resilience rugrat, by putting the cities together so that they become stronger and better. And in all the stages, we have this quality, the cycle of PDCA. So plan, do, check, act, and so on. But as we have to include more and more stakeholders, because resilience in a society or in a city means that more and more people have to participate, critical infrastructure, responders, public and private companies, NGOs, citizens, and so on. So these quality circles have to become more and more encompassing with more stakeholders and more quality, more improvement, and so on, until in the end, kind you have a process where all activities are sufficiently involved. So the nice thing about these activities is that they resonate. You know them from the standard for security. They go back from standard for quality. So the family 9000 for quality improvement was the inspiration for the standards family 27000, which are the standards for security. And in our project, we have also the German standardization body, abbreviated DIN, which was one of the pioneers in standards and one of the most important organizations in Europe concerning standards and so on. This issue of maturity models is very has also gained a lot of strength in security. So I have some ideas as to using maturity models. So if you are interested in a master thesis, that could be a possible basis for discussing that. And this can be connected also to some system dynamic models, perhaps in terms of archetypes of causal loop diagrams. Probably for doing simulations, a master thesis is not doesn't have enough time. But we can at least develop causal loop diagrams. Okay, then I think that's as much as I could tell you to start with. Then we have a break, which probably you also need. And we continue at 2:15. As you see, I am showing you also that security is more than just information security. Information security is essential because it affects the critical infrastructure of communication. It's perhaps the most important critical infrastructure, but everything is connected. And in the second half, I will tell you a little bit about insights that we got from the management of a different kind of disaster in Norway. And I will tell you how this is also important for the critical infrastructure of communication and security. Final questions before we take the break? Okay, then see you a bit later. Mm-hmm.